Our next speaker is Rabbi Stephen Weil, and his topic is a rabbi farmer's perspective on the challenges of producing kosher cattle. Rabbi Weil is probably the only rabbi maybe in the world who grew up on a cattle farm, and he will explain to us the kosher and practical issues of a cattle farm. Rabbi Weil.
Because there may be issues of time, what we're going to do is start with the issues of 3, 4, and 2 first, and then hopefully have time for the other issues. My family, like many other German Jews, for numbers of years, were in the cattle business in Germany. It was a function of the Third Reich and Hitler. They became refugees. Thank God they made it out. When they came to the United States, they went back into the cattle business. We deal with basically 6 or 7 different breeds of cattle. Many of them are dairy breeds, Holsteins, Jerseys, etc. Many of them are beef breeds, Herkers, Black Angus, Charley, etc. Just something to note, one issue you have is a Jewish farmer, or if you're not a farmer but a cattle dealer who buys from others, is the issue of Bechor. That's issue number two. All of you know that the firstborn animal that's born, obviously belongs to the coin, but not only that, it's Kadosh Mirecha. It has the status of a korba. So you have a very serious issue, and that is that if Baser Bahanah, there's an issue of Mila, etc. There's a famous story that Rav Fuchs tells. He's a Rav, a big Talmud Chacham, learned by Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he lives in the Mivseret Zion. He grew up here, he was involved with a student at the Skokie Yeshiva. He was in the B'nai Akiva, and they had these Hachsharas. In New Jersey, there was a Hachshara, and he realized, wait a second, we own these cattle, they're giving birth, we have the core issues. So he went to Lakewood, New Jersey, and he met with Rav Aaron Cutler. He's a young man, he was a B'nai Akivanet. He asked Rav Aaron Cutler the Shiloh that they have. And the story he tells is that Rav Aaron went to his secretary and asked, please, could you delay all the meetings for the next couple of days? He shut the door, he took the Gemara Bechoros off the shelf, he started kissing it, he started dancing with the Gemara Bechoros. And he was able to apply halacha lemaisa issues of being matir. And they took Rav Aaron, they took him to the farm, to the hachshara, to look at some of the animals, whether this bechor had a mum kavu or a mum over. On our farm, what we dealt with Rav Herschel Schechter. I went and Rav Schechter created a shtar for us that enabled our herdsman, Bob Buffin. See, our issue was a little bit difficult because not only did we have to sell chelik of all the animals in our herd so that we would have a goyisha owner that would exempt it from the halacha of course of the core. But in our case we had to sell him a piece of the business because we were constantly buying animals, we're constantly making acquisitions, so he had to have an ownership in B. Weil and Son Cattle Dealers Incorporated. So technically it's not B. Weil and Son, it's B. Weil and Son and Buffin, the potter from before. Of course the issue is if a Jewish farmer, let's say in Israel, they do have a bechor. So if the animal has a baal mum, then it can be given to the kohen. Then it's mamon of the kohen. But nevertheless, there's a prohibition. That animal can't be bred. That animal can't be milked. In the case of, or if you're dealing with bechor, so dealing with males. Can't be, let's say you're dealing with the lamb. Can't shear the wool. There are many, many issues that are involved, even if the animal has a mum itself. What I wanted to go to was issues 4 and 3 for a brief moment. In terms of, let's say, the practical ramification for selling beef, the issue you have, of course, is the issue of trade-offs. Now, in every slaughterhouse, Rabbi Mendel's going to speak about this, every animal is checked. Its lungs are checked. We're talking about behemagasis. How come they don't check hearts? How come they don't check kidneys? How come they don't check livers? You can have trephos in a liver and a kidney and a heart. So the answer is that there's very significant role in the animals that have no problems of lesions, of trachomas, of biological problems with the hearts, with the livers and kidneys. If you find one, obviously the animal's not, is a trachoma, it's not kosher. But with lungs, we have what's called a miyutamatsuri. Miyutamatsuri is a significant minority. What's the definition of a significant minority? Many follow the great Talmud from Chaim Volozhin, the Mishnah of Yaakov, from Yaakov Kadmina. He holds that a miyutamatsuri is 10%. We know, especially in America, not only in America, but in South America as well, that more than a miyutamatsuri of the bovine species has problems with their lungs. I mean, just to give you statistics, and this I have from Rabbi Ganapi statistics. In America, in terms of absolutely smooth lungs, what some refer to as Beis Yosef Glatt, not everyone holds that that's what Beis Yosef Glatt is, but absolutely smooth lungs with no rears, no lesions whatsoever, no silvus, no, you're looking at 8 to 10% of the animals, of the bovine species. Glatt, that some hold is also Beis Yosef Glatt, that we refer to, it's called Hungarian Glatt. You know, the Glatt of the Hungarians in Europe that has been transplanted to America, you're looking at an average of maybe 34%. Rabbi Mendel has specific statistics. We had a slaughterhouse in our shul in Michigan, Corn Belt Beef. Depending on the herd that we bought, that the steers and heifers were bought from, you were looking at some herd would come out at about 40% with Glatt kosher. Some would come out at like 18, 20% with Glatt kosher. Depended on the herd, it depended on the farm, etc. The average is somewhere around 34%. But those kind of numbers, that's kosher, Glatt kosher. You know what I'm saying? You don't have those kind of numbers when it comes to hearts, to kidneys, to livers. Okay. What Rabbi Ganat mentioned, what Rabbi Ganat said, is they found that many of the slaughterhouses in South America, in Brazil and Argentina, you're getting high 70%, you know, like 72, 76, 78% of the animals at Glatt kosher. So what's the difference between the cows in South America and the cows in the United States? Rabbi Ganat's feeling is, it's the gradation in temperature. Animals in America, most animals, are not raised in an atmosphere where there's one consistent temperature 12 months a year. There are jerks, there are spikes, there are ups and downs. That causes colds, causes flu, maybe in certain cases pneumonia. And the scar tissue on the outer part of the lung that other Mendel will speak about, those issues come with those colds, those flus, etc., the gradations in temperature. And that's why it's so difficult to get a great percentage of kosher lungs. That, as Rabbi Ganat is saying, is not the case in Argentina or Brazil, where you don't have the jumps in you have much more of a consistency in terms of the temperature and the climate. Okay. Going back to number three. Any farmer will tell you the following. Cow, meaning the female, a heifer calf, we refer to it as, a heifer calf that's born, that is a fantastic economic source of revenue. It's going to produce multiple children, multiple calves. It's going to produce a significant amount of milk. Depending on the breeding that we do with the animal, it may produce a significant percentage of milk fat as well. So those of you who like Haagen-Dazs, you know, even a couple of, you know, Aleichem Ruch, a bit more. The issue here, though, is what do you do with the bobcalves? Bobcalves mean the males. Okay? They're not going to produce milk. You don't need bobcalves to make children. And I'll give you an example. Not all of our farms, we have refrigerators that have semen, full semen. Okay? We only have what we call like a cleanup bull. There's certain animals, certain cows just don't take, using IUI, don't take to artificial insemination. So we'll have, they refer to them as a stud bull, a cleanup bull, we'll have one or two on every farm. But the reality is, if you look at a cow as an economic entity, you don't want to use a stud bull. You want to use, that's why we pay good money for it, that's why there are businesses that sell bull semen. And we, in fact, it's such a significant part of our business, we have generators on our farms that if, God forbid, the power ever goes out, the loss in semen is mamash atzora. I'm talking, you're talking about a significant economic loss. So the question is this, what do you do with all these bobcats, all these male bulls? Well, there's two options. And both are going to run into halakhic problems. One is, turn them into a steer. Turn them into a steer, obviously, what's the halakhic problem? Silvus. What is done, please, you know, in your mind, you're shrinking, you have these gruesome images, you probably turn them into skin. Basically, what is done is, we use a very tight rubber band, and we don't because we're Jews, we don't do it. But and you'll see the problem with selling it to Goyim in a second. You use a very tight rubber band, it stops the blood flow, it's put onto the bobcat when it's a young animal. What happens? The scrotum, the batesin, basically dry up because of the lack of blood flow, lack of oxygen, etc. Now, what's the advantage of that? When you don't have the testosterone in the animal, he becomes a she, for lack of better terminology. And that's gewaltig and geschmack in terms of having Yom Tov meals and Shabbos meals. You're going to have good, sweet, juicy meat. What do you use bull meat for? The only thing you can use bull meat for is mix it with other fazerai, and you can make salamis and hot dogs. It's not good, tender meat. It's not the kind of meat you can eat in terms of in of itself. Masha anything, that's not the case for spear meat. That's ideal. But what's the issue? The issue, of course, is sebus. Jews, not only is a Jew prohibited, but there's a machlokas tanayim, and we possibly a Gentile is not allowed to pasture. A Gentile cannot engage in sebus. So as a Jewish farmer, how do you sell to a Gentile? Leaf me'ir lo siten nechshon. You're not allowed to sell if you know they're going to make it into a spear. So there are, and it's the last Ramah, the last Ramah in Simon Hay of Eben Ezer, that discusses the issue of what happens if you're going to be selling it to a Gentile, and you know for a fact he may not necessarily be doing it. He may sell it to another Gentile who produces spears. He may have a Gentile veterinarian who's going to do his castration for him. He may have a worker who does his castration for him, whatever. Are you allowed to sell to a Gentile who they themselves are lifnei de lifnei? Is there shlichus, is there such a thing as shlichus by two Gentiles? These are all serious issues, and you'll see in that Ramah the different deos as to whether you can do that. Now, in practice, we can eat steer meat, and each and every one of you does partake of good steer meat when you get your finest cuts for Shabbos, for Yom Kippur, for special occasions. The issue is engaging in the steers. That's the issue. What happens if you take the other option? You don't sell to a steer farmer. What's your other option? It's going to be called what's known as a veal calf. The bob calf, the male animal, is going to be raised to be a veal calf. Could be raised, depending on the farm, to 200 pounds, could be raised to 400, 475, probably the outer limit. Is that right, Rabbi Mendel? A veal calf doesn't get much more than 450. You and I don't want to eat veal from an animal that's 500 pounds. You want to eat veal from an animal that's 250, 275 pounds. So what do you do there? Now, there are two types of veal farms, okay, that we sell to, BYL and Son Incorporated. One is a standard farm, where they're going to raise a calf, no different than a farmer would raise a female calf, a heifer calf. Okay? It's a second kind of farm that the folks at PETA and others, they're very dishonest in their presentation. Because in the part of the United States where I'm coming from, upstate New York, which after Minnesota and after Wisconsin, we were the number three dairy state in the United States. Okay? There, not that many of the farms have these metal cages. You've all seen the pictures. You've all read the New York Times articles on the metal cages. Some farms have them. I'm not even sure it's a roach, number one. And now comes the question that I'd like to ask is, there anything wrong with selling it to that kind of a farm? Well, first of all, there's a couple of issues. You know how the market of, let's say, meat consumers, they love something called white meat veal, right? Cuts like butter. White, how do you get white meat veal as opposed to red meat veal? Very simply. By keeping it in the cage, the animal doesn't build up muscles or strength because it's not using its muscles. It's not out there. It's not like a regular farm animal in its normal environment running around. That's number one. Number two is they give it an iron-free diet. Well, iron is what gives the red meat. So it's soft. It's white. The issue here is the tzar bali chayim. And I don't have an answer. This is a question I'm throwing out for the Chachamim here. I don't have an answer, and I tried researching this, and I just don't know. I know that the svara I'm going to give, but Moshe does not. It's a, you know, he has a tshuva in Ebenezer. Ebenezer Dalet, it's Simon Tzadi Beis, where he deals with the calves. So what happens? Is that Tzar Balei Chayim? The animal's not in pain. The animal doesn't know any better because these bobcats that get sold to these farms, They never had a life, quote unquote, free on the range. They never had a life of freedom where they're running around in their natural environment. From the time they were born, from the second or third day of their life, they are brought and sold and they're fed this way. Psychologically, there's no pain. Physically, there's no pain. Does that constitute Tsar Bali Chaim? Is there an issue to raise calves like that and to shep calves like that? I don't even know if that. I don't know the Gedarim of Tsar Bali Chaim. I'm just throwing out possibly that may not be an issue. Moshe in the Tshuva raises the issues with treifas. We just got through talking about that there is more than a miyukam matzah when it comes to the lungs. Masha ein kein by a heart, by a liver, by a kidney, with large animals of the bovine species. How about veal calves? So Rav Moshe, and statistically, this is not the case today, and that, again, we have to ask Rabbi Mendel, but statistically we found that this is not the case today with these veal calves. We don't have a miyud matzli of treifas, neither in the livers nor in the kidneys of these animals. The issue that was brought up a few years ago, and Ezra Schwartz in the RJJ Journal wrote about this, is that some of these farms fed the calves were called basar nevela b'chalav. The feed that was given to these calves was an issue. Now that's a famous issue. Those the Rabbanim here deal with this, the whole issue of the Nekuda Nifla of the Rambam, where he wants to argue, it's a challenging Rambam, that there's no issue here, since ein iser chalal iser, once the meat, zari nevela, what's the problem? Whereas all the other Rishonim are saying the following. It's a serious problem. When you take nevela dikka meat and you cook it with milk, with chalav, it adds. Because until now, there was an iser achila. Now you have an iser hana above and beyond. That's in the Nekuda Nifla. That's what the other Rishonim say. I apologize. That's what the other Rishonim say. What does the Rambam want to say in the Nekuda Nifla? That he wants to say it's tainuha. That the Isser Achila stems from the Isser Hana stems from the Isser Achila. Most of the Achronim, not the Dalgomer Mukbava, the noted Yehuda, he follows the sheet of the Rambam and the Nekuda Nifla, but most Achronim are Machmer in this issue. And they feel that you can't derive benefit from that kind of a feed. You can't be feeding animals that. Once the animals have been fed with this mixture that fattens them up, that strengthens them, that builds them into good, fat veal calves, now the question is, can you and I as Jews eat those calves? There we assume yes. Because there's a concept of zeb zagore. This is not the only factor that's fattened up the veal calves. It's a significant factor, but because of zeb zagore, we assume there are other factors that produced from this little bob calf into a nice, juicy veal calf, and therefore we eat them. In practice, we do eat them. I'd like to go back to number one. Are we timing still on time? Yeah? Okay. This is an issue that we deal with. For our farm, it was not particularly advantageous for us to be raising veal calves. We made more money on large animals. Actually, like every Jewish person, the most money is made as a middleman. You make it on the buy and on the sell. So for us to be raising veal calves, we used to sell them to veal farmers, our bobcats. But we did raise, over 1,000 head of animals. We raised large animals. Now, contrary to this image that one may have, an animal out there in this beautiful, pristine image, think of a John Wayne film, The American West, right? And the cattle out there grazing, Chisholm, John Chisholm, and they're grazing out in his pasture land. Folks, that's not the beef you want to put on your Shabbos or Yom Kippur table. That's tough beef. That's natural. That's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made them. That's the way they make them to eat. But that's the image of tough beef. You want good, juicy, geschmack beef? You feed them mixtures of hybrid corn. Okay? That fattens them. That makes the meat a little more tender, quite a bit more tender. You keep them that way in closer quarters so they don't build up the kind of muscles. And that makes them even more tender. That's how you raise beef. And that's your USDA prime. Now comes the problem, as a Jewish farmer, can you be feeding them hybrid corn? The farmer is not producing the hybrid. The farmer is buying from a feedlot, from feed providers, the hybrid. I'm sorry? It's different types of corn. So we're going to say, the halacha is that it's mutter. It's mutter for us to use this It's not a problem on many levels. Number one is, if you go through the Mishnayos in the first parak of Kelayim, and that's also reiterated in the early parak and in the parak Aleph and Beis, Mishnayos Truma, that within a certain species, and again, I'm not using halakhic terminology now, but within a certain species, wheat and wheat, for instance, the Mishnah and Truma gives example, corn and corn, that's not called Kelayim. So the fact that a hybrid corn is being produced, that's not Kelayim. Tomato and string beans is Kelayim. Not corn and corn. Okay? So there's not a problem, number one, producing it, not a problem of planting it. And taking this to the next level, the Isser Kelayim and Chutz La'aretz is limited to two areas. Number one is Kilei HaKeren, right? Planting other species near the vine. And number two is Harkava, grafting. Now, there's the notion that the Isser Zri of Kelayim doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. But even within that realm, at least the rabbis that I went to in preparation for this are saying that the hybrid corn that's used is not an Isser of Kelayim. Number five, what becomes a very significant issue, and it's an Orach Chaim issue, it's not a Yoredei issue, is a Mira La'akum. So vis-a-vis milking cows, we're not going to discuss that here because there's much material on that. Okay. Our workers, our employees, are all paid by the week, paid by the month, by the year. You know what I'm saying? We're not paying them hourly. They're regular employees. They're milking cows every day of the week, no different than any other day of the week. You know, we're not asking them to do it. I don't even want to go into that area. But the issue that is a significant area for a farm is, what about harvesting crops? I'll give you an example. Let's say the wheat is going to sprout because the weatherman tells you it's going to rain on Sunday. You've got to get that wheat in today on Shabbos. Let's say you have another issue. You've harvested the crop. The crop is out there drying in the field. If you don't bale the hay, if you don't bring in the crop, and it gets rained on, it's going to be destroyed. The weatherman says it's going to rain on Sunday. If you don't do it today, Shabbos, you're talking about a significant loss. That's a challenge that we have in our farms. So the way that was dealt with, and again, please feel free to comment on this, the way that it was dealt with was, again, we had specialists. It's true with all farms today. Let me just give you a sense. The farm that you envision is not the farm of the Shetzel in Poland. It's not the farm of Little House on the Prairie. What happened to your local hardware store is... What Home Depot did to your local hardware store, what Sam's Club and Costco did to the local 5 and 10, that's essentially what has happened to the farmer in America over the course of the last 25 years. A large farm, when I was a child in the early 70s, a large farm was 50, 60 cows. There were larger farms that were farms of 200 and 250 cows. Today, a large farm is 5,000 cows, 4,000 cows being milked. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a farmer milking 50 cows a day. It doesn't exist. In other words, imagine, again, use the muscle of the local hardware store to Home Depot. That's what's happened in agribusiness in America today. Yeah, what happens is, for instance, the co-op that we used had all the pasteurization, all the homogenization was done in one co-op. Just to give you, this is a derech agav, but it's a very important story for those involved in kashrus. You know, the whole issue with Moshe, the Rav Zatzal, the Chazanish, the Mirtas. That's why we're not makbid on Kol Yisrael, because of the Mirtas. Let me tell you one story. One Sunday, we would do the milking on Sunday. We would give off the hired help. Because during the week, we were out buying and selling cattle, which is the primary income generation in our business. The farming was ancillary, was feeding the cattle business. But on Sunday, we would do the milking, etc. One Sunday, we couldn't. There was some kind of family affair we had to be at. It was a tough thing for my father. And he used to love working on Sunday. He'd get out of going to my mother's family for events. This one, he couldn't get out of Sunday. Remember, we had a man, Mark Ball. A gentleman who lived down the road from us. He's the guy. And my father sat and specifically said, which animals don't put their milk in the tank? This animal's on penicillin because of whatever reason, had bovine mastitis. This animal's on penicillin for this reason. And after you finish giving the cow penicillin, you can't use the milk for another 10 days. the milk is either hold up the yibud or the wild cats that comes around. They have a gishmaka meal, you know, they get the penicillin. So what happened? He forgot, he made a mistake. Now, you listen to this story. He puts in the milk into our big tank. You know, our tank that, I don't know, maybe it had, maybe it held 10,000 pounds of milk, something like that. That tank is picked up by a tractor trailer, an 18-wheeler. There are many other 18-wheelers picking up the milk, going into the co-op that Rabbi Grossman referred to. Guess what happened? The small, you think about the miuch of the meal, the trace of penicillin, they picked it up. And since they have every farm that they pick up from, they take a little sample, so that way if something happens, they can route it back. We had insurance. But you're talking about, that was about a $30,000 loss because the co-op had to spill all that milk. So we had insurance to cover it. You understand, they're testing. So I'm using the example of the Maaseh Shehayah of penicillin. But the same is true. You couldn't put pig's milk. You couldn't put horse's milk. You couldn't put milk with anything because it would get picked up in the chemistry labs at the co-ops. That wasn't part of the shear, but that just... What Moshe was saying with Mirtas is not that, to quote Ari, Dr. Zivotofsky, it's not just him sitting in the basement. He knew the Metzius. Anyways.
Question.
Yeah.
Feeding ground up meat to a cow. What's the situation?
They won't eat it.
They won't.
You can call the dogs into the barn because the cows are going to leave it over. They won't eat it.
But if you mix it in with the feed and it's very little, they hardly detect it?
I don't know. I've never tried that.
I'll talk about it later.
One issue that's an issue number six I'd like to deal with. Oh, so number five is the harvesting of the crops. We hired people by the year. They were full employees. Their job was to run the equipment and to run the fields. You know what? We treated them no different than milkmen or herdsmen. Okay? Their job was running the fields, etc. And therefore what? They made the decision when to do it. So they were doing it, but it was a daita denasha. You know, even though they're working for us, they're the ones who make the cheshbon, they're the ones who make the determination when we harvest, when we bring it into the barn, you know, when we bring it into the silo, etc. Number six, I just want to go briefly to the beginning of the Sefer Avodah Zarah. This is a major problem. Cows, as you know, do not take off for Labor Day or Rosh Hashanah. Right? You know that. They milk 365 days a year. Well, you want to know something? Cows die 365 days a year also. They don't take off. So we were on call all the time to have animals picked up, you know, an animal that's sick before it's dying, to have it slaughtered, whatever it may be. What happens when a farmer calls you on December 25th? What happens when a farmer calls you on Easter Sunday, the day before, the day after? I'm going to talk about significant amounts of money here. What happens when they need to keep up their milk production? They need active milking cattle. They need them, not yesterday, they need them now. Can you do business on the 25th or Easter? So, you know the Mishnah. The Balei Tosfos, Minagav HaSeishi Deyem, what does that mean? An article. Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, he wrote an article on this. Professor Tashma has an article on this. Why did the Balei Tosfos say Minagav HaSeishi Deyem? Because you know what? When they do the deal, they're not going to turn around, okay, and they're not going to go, you know, to St. Patrick's and be Koreo Mishaka there if they make money. That's not the nihum, that's not the practice, so to speak, of the Christian world in America or in Europe or in South America in that sense. It's a business deal like any other deal. So there's a minhag not to do business on that day itself, but in terms of the days lifneihem, days achareihem, that we're not knowing. And that has practical ramifications. The final thing I'm going to end is a kosher mishpat issue, and that is the following. This is a major problem. You have to understand, there's a whole group of German Jewish refugees, my family included, who were Landsjuden in Deutschland. Country folk, Jews in every country, and they were the ones who were the cattle dealers. In German it's called a Viehhandler. They bought and sold livestock throughout the German countryside. Many of them settled in America. The only ones I know that are still in the business are Flum family in Baltimore. Their name is Gutman. Flum family, the boys went to TA, Gutman family. They are still in the business in Bnei Torah, etc. Most of those people today, unfortunately, will be the third generations, either intermarried or moved to the cities and stay Jewish. But the issue is this. In that line of business, there's something known, we joke, we call them a factory farmer, we call them a city slicker. What happens? Real estate is dirt cheap in farm areas in America. It's dirt cheap. It's not Southern California real estate. So they've got all this real estate around them. And what do? They take 4 or 5 animals, 8, 10 animals, they raise them. These people don't know market factors, okay? Because their main business is they work at Harrison Radiator. Their main business is they work at this factory or they work in this store. This is, they have the real estate, they might as well make a little side income raising cows. So who do they call? B. Weil & Son Incorporated. They call Billy Weil or Stevie Weil. It's me. I'm the kid. Yeah, they call us, you know, to sell their animals because we have the trucking, et cetera. We have the abilities and the facilities to handle it for them. And they turn to you and they say, what's it worth? The biggest Yates horror we had was to turn to them and say, we can't tell you what it's worth. It's your animal. How can we tell you to give us a price on your animal? The biggest things are because I was salivating. You know, my wallet was going to expand on these deals. Can't do that. Well, now it's mama. I think you've all read the Torah Tanima. You've got the footnotes there. I mean, whether it's Prat La'akum or not, they have no clue what the market is, and they'll take what you give them. If I can use a city analogy, imagine you're a stamp collector, you a Judaica collector, right? Or you collect precious metals, and they call you, my uncle died, my parent died, and you know, I got all this, what's this worth? Right? And you want to say, oh, I'll give you $5,000 for the whole shooting match. And a wholesale level, it's worth $150,000. And they're happy to take the $5,000 because they're clueless. It's just not their illness. So the Choshen Mishpat part of our business was also a challenge. Because you have to turn to them and you have to say, this is the market value. Assuming that Onas Mamon is also a consideration for nothing as well. Thank you.